Coming to you live from the JRE Tobacco Aladino Mobile Studios, it's the Cigar Pulpit.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another sermon from the Cigar Pulpit. I'm the Bishop of the Burn, Nick, and with me on his four-season room that he's working on, but it's still very nice, we have Mr. Jonathan of Two Guys Smoke
What's
Shop
up?
And the Cigar Authority. How you doing?
What's going on?
Oh, not much. Living the dream here in St. Louis. We got great weather. Was able to sit out and enjoy some nice weather this weekend. I was playing doctor to my seven-year-old this weekend. I pick him up Friday. He's perfectly fine. Saturday morning, that kid had no energy and then started throwing up, and it's like, well, this is awesome. So, you know, he napped a lot, but the beauty of the napping a lot is he was napping on the couch, and I was able to just pop right out the patio door, sit on the patio, and have my cigars all weekend long while he was sleeping. So it worked out.
Gotta love it.
I know, right? Anyway, so today we have a variety of different topics, but first, let's go ahead and get a cigar going. So what are you smoking today?
Today I opted to light up the Alfonso number 4 in honor of this is my vacation week. So I'm a firm believer that you can't drink all day unless you start in the morning. So I got my bottle of Macallan. This is the classic cut Highland Scotch whiskey, single malt.
It's awful and, low.
And again, you can't drink all day if you don't start in the morning.
Okay.
And I got this Alfonso number 4, which is tied for first place for the best cigar I've ever smoked in my life ever. This week's lineup is going to include this Alfonso number 4 that I saved for this podcast. I also have an Atabey Black that I'm going to light up along with Corojo Reserves in my regular rotation. We'll get into that later. But yeah, this cigar features 4 years of cedar aging and then 1 year of aging in a virgin French oak room,
okay,
which is the same oak that Chateau Lafite Rothschild, the wine, is matured in. They make those wine casks out of that virgin oak.
I've heard you talk about this one before. Yeah.
So it's a very long, involved process of essentially dry boxing, but it's dry boxing a warehouse of rolled cigars that are not banded and not cellophaned yet. Some of them are in cedar cubicles. Some are in the oak cubicles. The humidity gets brought down to around 45% and then back up to 65% over and over the course of this 4 year and 5 year period. And what that does is it removes every iota of impurity from not just the tobacco, but from the cigar itself. And what you're left with is just concentrated, well-fermented, well-aged, very aromatic tobacco. I've got the windows closed in the four-season room here. I'm gonna pull a Ned Sullivan right now, and I'm just going to smoke this place out by myself. And I don't care because the smoke smells so good.
There you go. I love the idea. And I ended up going into the humidor, and I was telling you in via text beforehand, I have got to take an inventory because I'm not even 100% sure what I've got these days. And but one thing I do know I have is I'm working through the box of the TAA Ciento Por Ciento, the brick house from J.C. Newman. I bought this from you guys, actually, when that hit. And it's a all Nicaraguan cigar. I think it's like 6 1/4 by 54. And I love this thing. It's that brick house that knows somebody. It's just that higher level of, you know, fun that comes with it. And I still have a couple of the 2019 Ciento Por Cientos chilling in the humidor somewhere, but they're buried back in the back and I don't remember exactly where they're at. So that's why I need to get in there and circle around.
The rumor floating around about the 2019 version was that J.C. Newman found some of that size in a small quantity, like 10,000 cigars.
Yeah.
Of the original blend that were done in the old factory. So they kept some of those to reverse engineer and get the flavor of the new ones to be similar,
okay,
but or as close as you can get. But I believe that first run was original Brick House when it was $5 a cigar, and they were made. I don't remember the name of the other factory, but
if
they had built their own factory now, and they're really coming into their own with that factory.
If that's the case, then those Brick House for $5 back when they came out, that was ridiculous. Because
it was such an amazing cigar.
Yeah. No, that's ridiculous. Well, let's go ahead and get these things cut and lit because I want to get going on a cigar here. So it's time to cut the cigar, and the official cutting is brought to you by Dan the Man Ponder at Riverman Cigar Company of Crestwood, Missouri. And guys, if you're looking for all things J.C. Newman or even Arturo Fuente, you can head on over to Riverman Cigar Company because he's got quite the connection there with Mr. Jake, the rep and sales director on this half of the country. And, you know, he gets all kinds of great hard-find Newman and Fuente cigars that you can pick up over there and enjoy. And if you're not in the St. Louis area, but you still want to get a hold of some of those great cigars, you can give him a call because Dan does do mail order, and he can get a box of cigars sent to you right away. It's Riverman Cigar Company of Crestwood, Missouri. And now we'll go ahead and cut the cigar.
Nice cutter. Just because you cut your cigars using what I use doesn't mean you can be me.
I get that. I actually bought this from you.
Not surprised.
I was up at, it was when I came up for the anniversary party in 22. I didn't have mine. And actually, I had the old version, the old model. So I had some screw issues going on with it. And
so that was the second run of these. They used the wrong Loctite.
Okay.
And the first run was immaculate. And this is first run. The second run had those screws that backed out. And then the third run and forward, they were back to their original glory. Okay. I'm going to get off mic just for one second. I put my ashtray too far away. Stand by.
No problem. So I gave this guy a cut, and I'll go ahead and do a cold draw here. I don't know if I've had one of these on the show or not, to be honest. I know I had the 2019. I can't remember if I've done the 23. I probably did, to be honest. I don't know.
I'm back.
Okay. So, little barnyard, little sweetness. Not, I don't necessarily want to say raisiny, but a little sweetness to it.
So, I don't know if you've ever smelled the inside, and this is going to sound like such a shitty description, but this is exactly what it is.
Cinnamon Chinese pea pods.
Have you ever smelled the inside of an El Producto box after the cigars are gone?
No.
It is really raisiny tobacco.
Okay.
So I could have said this is raisiny tobacco, but it, for people that have ever, my grandfather smoked El Producto, so I'm very familiar with the inside of that box smell because he would give us boxes as little presents, would come over and help him work in the garage or whatever. And
yeah,
he'd say, here, take an empty box to put your rocks in or whatever. And I just remember associating that smell with him. The cold draw of this takes me all the way back to that early, early memory of that raisiny tobacco flavor slash smell.
All right. I'm even going to leave the get your rocks off of your grandfather's box joke away and leave that alone. Or I can just throw it out there for
I think
just,
you just did throw it out there.
To just languish and die, but that's okay. Anyway, oh, God, I'm getting this thing lit. So before we get into the business of the day, how the hell you been?
I've been great. I've been just working on the house, and I scheduled my vacation for the week after March Madness by design. It's the slowest sales week, and as the manager, I like to be there anytime that there are events that are going on. So I schedule my vacations around when there's little to nothing or nothing going on, and that happens to be this week.
Perfect. Well, before I want to talk to you about the March Madness sale, but before we do, I want to thank you because you know, everybody that listens to Cigar Authority that knows you, you know, they you know, they kind of tend to,
I'm a dick.
Yeah, they perceive you as an asshole. They see you have this persona that you're just a dick, you know, and everything. And so I just want to say, for the record, that as we sit here and record Monday afternoon, that it was less than 18 hours ago that I sent you a message saying that I know it's super last minute. What are the odds you're free to do a podcast tomorrow? And within minutes, you got back to me and you're like, I can do it. What time? And it's one of those things that between the newspaper and, you know, my son and just a lot of other different life events, I've been super busy lately. And I will freely admit, I have been really bad about taking time to build out the calendar, get invites sent out, schedule things out. And so I've kind of scrambled a little bit. That's why there was a solo show on Friday. That's why I texted you, you know, 18 hours
you
ago.
You killed it. You absolutely killed it. Dave was right on that show. I finished listening to it this morning because I didn't want you to reference that show and me having not listened to it. You hit every single major point exactly on the head. You actually didn't even have to say, listen, this is really for the retailers out there, because the consumer needs to understand a couple of things. The consumer needs to understand the concept of burning through dead product, and don't abuse your brick and mortar retailer and buy only the stuff that they're offering on deal. Those should be considered by the consumer to be add-ons to the sale. You go in and you get your $12 Perdomo and do the right thing, because you like to have a place to smoke.
Yeah.
You like to have a place to go and get your cigars now. But also, a part that you are actually a little more kind than I think I liked, I would have gone a little more for the jugular, not supporting the companies that are going to put the little guy out of business. And that includes not buying those cigars from your brick and mortar. And you can do some easy research on this. The cigars that appear out of nowhere to be sold at less than cost,
yeah,
a couple times a year on certain websites.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those websites own those cigars. They own those trademarks. And those companies, believe me, when they put the last brick and mortar business out of business, their prices are going to go right up to where beyond where they are at your local brick and mortar. You will not have a place to smoke. You will not have a convenient way to get your cigars. They will not keep their brick and mortar stores open because they are terrible at retail. I understand you had a great experience, but by and large, yeah, those massive companies, I actually hope they open next to me. I will bury them.
Oh,
because my customer service is better than theirs.
For sure.
I will win on every transaction in that way.
Well, I appreciate that. But to finish my thought, I appreciate you taking time out like so quickly, and especially knowing it's your vacation week. I really do appreciate it. So you're not as much of a dick as everybody says you are.
I kind of am.
Well,
but
all right. Well,
you're welcome.
Anyway. Well, no, and that's kind
of
what
it is.
What's
people
that?
People mistake me being direct and saying exact. When you deal with me on a personal level, I was having a conversation with my friend Eric, who wanted to come over and see the room, and he needed a warm place to smoke a cigar. And I said, come on over. And we smoked a cigar together, and he still had some of his he bought an expensive box of cigars last week. So he's smoking his $40 Distinguidos Byron, and he still had about half of it left, and I was done mine. And I said, I hope you don't mind, but I got a podcast at 1, so I'm going to finish trimming out this light switch here and taking my measurements. And he finished his cigar while I did that, and we continued shooting the shit.
Yeah.
But the conversation was about people get butthurt when you're direct, and it's not me that's the asshole. It's the person that's too sensitive and can't handle the truth now.
True.
And that's what, this is why Dave and I get along so well, is because we both deliver the truth now and not sugarcoat it. It's not about someone's feelings. It's about, all right, where are we going with this? Are we living life to be truthful, or are we living life to protect everybody?
Well, and I'd also take that one step further and say, it's not just a matter of people don't like hearing the truth right away, like you're saying, hear the truth now. It's that everybody can't handle the fact that people have different opinions and different thoughts on the matter, you know, whatever the matter happens to be. And so nobody wants to hear dissenting thoughts. I mean, look, I don't know what a lectin is. And I love certain foods that you don't, but you know what? I'm not going to judge you for, you know, eating like only meat and ignoring the pasta and all that, because by God, that leaves more pasta for me. So
that's true.
Yeah.
There is a shortage in the world of pasta, and if someone's going to consume it, it should be you.
I agree. Damn it. Oh,
and how come Ed Sullivan doesn't get the title of being Dick? That dude is so vicious with some of his comebacks.
This is
so vicious.
Yeah, but he's so funny with it, because it's like he just comes out of absolutely nowhere with his just cutting remarks. Now, the other thing I would say about that, he's very like calm and collected with it. You tend to get very animated and sometimes a little like it's your demeanor. You come across a little like loud and mean, whereas if you just like said some of this shit at like the deadpan kind of tone that he has, you know, maybe it would come across.
I'll take
a little
that under
funnier.
Advisement.
I'm just telling you, you know, I might do it. So I wanted to talk about the March Madness sale because it kind of piggybacks into what I talked about to an extent in that show Friday about CI coming to St. Louis, which is the need to. And you touched on it just a bit ago, clear out dead inventory, you know, and the need to keep track of what you've got, keep track of what's actually selling. And if it's not selling, to get rid of it, get it off the shelves because it's just taking up space. And so for those listeners who you know, aren't familiar with your sale, maybe just kind of educate them as to what that would be.
So what happens for the March Madness sale is a couple of things. We accomplished a couple of objectives with this particular event. We go through a lot of dead product and free up that capital. And yes, the product gets sold in some cases for less than what we paid for it, but somewhere around the 2-year mark of staring at the same shit, it has to go. It has to go. So the price has to be so low that if it's the worst cigar you've ever smoked in your life, you'll still buy it, and those will be the ones you give out on the golf course to the three other mooches that you don't want to give up a good cigar for.
Which every cigar smoker should have an inventory of those, because at some point or another,
of course,
somebody's going to ask you for a cigar, and if you don't want to give up one of your good ones, you got to have some shitty ones sitting around that you can give them.
100% true.
Yeah.
So it accomplishes blowing through dead product. It also accomplishes a little gift to the cigar smokers that frequent our shop. Most of the people that show up, and it's 1,200 or so that come cycling through for the event, most of the people are regular customers, and it gives them a little incentive where there's also a percentage off of everything.
Okay.
So if you follow us on social media, you'll know the percentage. I'm not looking to blow anything up here, so in that respect, but there's a certain percentage off across the board. And then what most people do is they come in and they get their regular cigars, and then they go shopping on the deal table for the exact thing that I said to you. And some things are sleepers on that deal table where, oh my God, this cigar only came out one time and two guys smoke shop bought too many of them. They sold well, and maybe the store sold out of their inventory, but mail order ended up carrying it because it didn't have the same hype, or vice versa. So we've got product where, all right, this was a one-time release. It was highly sought after, and it just didn't sell out because we bought too many. There's a myriad of reasons why you end up with product that would be on the sale table or in the sale bin. But in our case, we rip it off like a Band-Aid all at once and say, all right, this is the stuff that's going to be on the 40 or 50% off table or the 2 for $100 table, and just dump it. Make the price so good they can't say no. And even if you lost money on it, at least now you have that capital freed up. And more important than the capital is the space.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I hear that from retailers all the time, that they just don't have space for new stuff coming in, and they've got to figure out, you know, how to rearrange the humidor for this and this and this and whatever. But, you know, to your point about the capital, you know, if a retailer is sitting there and they're saying to themselves, well, I spent $100 per box to bring this in, and I don't want to lose money on it. Every year it sits there, that's just money tied up. And even if you take a loss on it, you've absorbed that loss however many years ago to where it's just more money in your pocket now that you can reinvest.
You literally already lost money on it because you paid somebody to handle that cigar or that box of cigars. How many times between when you took it in and when we're talking about? So if you held on to it for 3 years, most likely that box of cigars was moved 4 times a year. You paid someone to do that. You also paid for shipping for it to get to you. And then you paid it for it to move 4 times a year. So if this is the third year, it's been moved 12 times. That was unnecessary. By the second year, if you got rid of it, that employee that was paid to move that box is moving a box that actually moves.
Yeah.
And that's, we find at our March Madness sale that our number of tables that we have with dead product, that number gets smaller and smaller. And people come in and they go, wow, it's not like back in the day when the, there were these unbelievable deals.
Yeah, because you're buying better.
We're buying better.
Yeah.
And less companies are discontinuing product. So if Padron, I believe, discontinued the, I know for a fact, they discontinued making the Delicious size. Which, okay. In the 1000 series, it's the only one that has a name. It's not a 1000. It's a Delicious.
Okay.
So they discontinued that, and that was on one of the tables 3 years ago. That's an unbelievable find for a consumer to walk in and get a deep discount on a cigar that you never see discounted anywhere ever.
For sure.
So a consumer walking in might say, oh, why don't you put more Padrones on the discount table? Well, because that doesn't make sense. We're going to sell them. We're going to sell every single one. That particular one dead size needed to be made to go away so that we can buy more 2,000s and 3,000s.
Gotcha. So then in terms of how you like manage this, obviously, I mean, I know you guys have a POS system. So I assume when you enter this product in prior to the sale, you enter it in at the discount, and that way somebody can't come up with like some other cigar and be like, oh, I found this on the table and it's 50% off or something like that. You know, you.
Oh, they try it. And we say, okay, let me just scan that and see what it comes up as.
Yeah.
Oh, this is the global discount for everything. Uh-huh. Sorry that it was on the table. Someone must have put it there. If a retailer does not have a POS system and their own system for barcoding, so I can. This is not proprietary information.
Yeah.
Two Guys Smoke Shop, the first letter of the brand gets a number. A gets one. So Aladinos and Atabays all start with 01. And all the way down to the letter Z, which is 26. So those first two numbers of our six number barcodes are all based on the letter of the alphabet.
Okay.
And then you've got 1,000 other possibilities after it, right? Probably more than that. I'm terrible with the exponential.
9,999, actually, but.
All right, perfect. So yeah. We're never going to run out. Never. So with our barcode system, we know if the barcode is incorrect or if it's correct based on the first two numbers and the letter of the alphabet, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But I can dial in the down to percentage points of what's in the bottom 10%, what's in the top 10%. And we look at it every day to see what the fluctuation is. And certainly we dive deep every month because we want to know what brands are rising, what brands are dropping, because it's important data for the buyer to know. Listen, brand X is on its way down. You can ease up on this because we're seeing a downtrend. And sometimes it's a downtrend just in my store in Salem. Sometimes it's a downtrend just in the Seabrook or the Nashua stores. But when we look at that data, we can really see what where things are going and what's coming up and what's coming down. And when at the end of the year, when something's in the bottom 10%, it gets axed.
Yeah.
But we knew it was in the bottom 10% in the middle of the year. And it goes on the buyer's radar and say, listen, you got to look at brand X because it's not selling like it used to. You should ease up and let's see if we can make this, we can buy the inventory down on brand X and Y and Z so that it doesn't hit the March Madness table. It sells out exactly at the end of the year.
Gotcha.
And we get to do that on five or six brands. Some of them, the deal was too good, whatever. It was bought too early before we saw the writing on the wall. But most of the time, we can catch it.
Okay. Interesting. That's the thing. It's all about watching the data and having the data and watching the data because, you know, as you just pointed out, it helps with your buyer, which then leads back to what you were saying earlier about how consumers are coming and saying, oh, there's less stuff on the table and blah, blah, blah. It's like, you know, you've got Ed and I guess Dave. I mean, you know, I think we could probably put something shiny in front of Dave, and as long as it's got a good gimmick, we could sell him on it. But, you know, but
yes and no. The one thing that dude can do is figure out margin in his brain, and he can recognize, and he's batting like 850 when it comes to.
Oh, and see, and that's a good average because nobody's batting 1,000.
Correct.
Yeah. So now you guys only do this sale one time a year.
That's it.
Okay. Well, that makes sense then. It's one time a year, you clear it out. And I guess it's kind of convenient, especially this year, because it's happening, you know, what, weeks before PCA. So you clear it all out, and then PCA happens, and Ed can go out to Vegas or, I guess, New Orleans next year and, you know, fill all that room back up.
Right. And when it takes the manufacturer 3 months to fulfill the order, that gives us the extra time to be able to rearrange things. You know, things get spread out and you spread yourself thin when you don't have enough product. But then the stuff starts trickling in and you get tighter and tighter in your cases. And then it gets to the breaking point of, all right, let's start discontinuing some shit because we're out of space.
So do you pull stuff throughout the year and stick it aside if it's like not moving in order to make space?
Yeah. So,
okay.
I would say by the end of the first quarter, I start running reports for myself and I say, okay, Ed, this is what's going on. This stuff has not moved yet. So I'd like to put it on your radar and maybe you slow down on your buying. And so he makes that decision, yay or nay, based on the other information he's getting from the other stores and what's selling online. And honestly, sometimes stuff is killing it online.
Yeah.
Because you have the entire country that you're dealing with. And in the pocket of our 3-state or 4-state area, it's just not moving because it hasn't hit that popularity yet, or it's never going to.
Yeah.
So he'll say, well, we're going to keep it. You can send me your product because I can move it online. All right, no problem. But at the end of that first quarter, it's already on my radar. I'm thinking of next year's March Madness and how do I make those tables smaller and smaller? And how do I give myself enough space to stay wide? Because the American consumer can only see 36 inches wide on a shelf.
Okay.
This is data from Nick Perdomo, who met with the folks at Google, and they ran studies with high-end cameras and people's scanning people's vision. And all right, on the shelf, they can see 36 inches or greater. So if I have 4 boxes and they're stacked Robusto, Toro, Churchill, Gordo, and they're on top of each other and they all fit into a 2-foot space, there is no way the American consumer is going to see that product, period. They have to be shown it at that point.
Okay.
So if I could get those spread out and I can get rid of the 4 boxes of cigars next to it and I can spread that out to the full 36 inches, it'll sell itself if it looks like the cigars that consumer smokes, meaning Connecticut Shade, Sun Grown, Maduro, whatever. That's that part becomes everything when you talk about silent salesman. And silent salesman is about 20% of the business.
Okay. So like the color and the flaps with the data and everything that are in the box.
And we've talked about this before, putting the box price on the cigar with the discount already figured in. There's a lot of stuff that happens, but that all die. If you do it all perfectly, you can change your business by about 20%. 80% of it is having a good staff and having a good product mix so that you can put the right product in the right customer's hands.
Gotcha. Interesting. Well, like I said, it was one of those things. I talked about a lot of stuff on Friday. And it just kind of happened. I didn't even realize that that was the day. Because you guys always do it, what, the first Friday of March?
First Friday, yep.
Okay. And it just so happened that that was March 1st. And so then later in the day, I'm seeing the posts about your sale, and I'm thinking, well, shit, this actually is super relevant. So it kind of worked out that it timed out that way. Because, you know, like I said.
When does this podcast post?
Tomorrow, Tuesday.
Oh, perfect. You're gonna it's gonna look like we copied you.
Ha!
our after show actually is talking a little bit about this topic.
Holy shit.
And about killing dead product and the whole bit.
Well, by God, for once I'm coming out ahead of you with something.
I love it. And that was completely organic, Dave, because I know you listen. It's going to look like I copied the after show. No, Nick hit me up and he said, this is what we were talking about. And I just said, yes,
it's true. It's true. Oh, that's funny. I like it. Well, cool. Well, let's go ahead and do this now. It's time for the Villiger Cigars Entertainment Report. Brought to you by
Villiger.
Villiger Cigars, one of the leading cigar and cigarillo manufacturers in the world, founded in 1888 and still family-owned and operated. Head over to VilligerCigars.com and check the store locator to find a shop near you that carries them. We guarantee that Villiger Cigars will be a wonderful addition to your humidor and cigar rotation. So, I am pulling up my list. Oh, wait. That's not even relevant for this segment. Anyway, that's the next segment I'm getting ready for already. Anyway, so what have you been entertained by here lately?
So I found, I don't know if you remember it, it was on Comedy Central back before Comedy Central was woke.
And nothing but South Park. Show,
yeah. It was a show called Tough Crowd with Colin Quinn.
I remember Colin Quinn. I don't know if I'm necessarily thinking of the same show. But I do remember.
I think he's only ever had one show.
Okay. Well, then, yeah. Then I probably am thinking of it then.
It was in the late 90s, early 2000s. And he is unquestionably a what we would consider now to be a right wing conservative.
Okay.
In the day, he was just a comedian who felt a certain way about certain shit and felt other ways about other shit. And he would have his comedian buddies on, and some of them would be considered by today's standard to be liberal.
Okay.
They all shit on everybody. Some of the episodes are when George Bush is in office and Colin Quinn, who is clearly in the tank for the Republican Party as far as how he's voting, and he shits all over George Bush. Because George Bush was an idiot. And he deserved it. And he shit all over Bill Clinton because he was a douchebag and he deserved it.
There you go.
And the other comedians that would be some liberal, some conservative, they all shit on everybody. And I watch it because I remember a time when you could be friends with somebody that voted different than you. And honestly and truly, most of my friends I have that relationship with. I have plenty of friends that vote just straight left and plenty of friends that vote straight right. And we can get along and we can shit on everybody and it's all good. And this just brings me back to that time. So that's one of the shows I've been watching, especially with Patrice O'Neill, who is surprisingly conservative on certain stuff and very liberal on other stuff. And he just has such an impressive take or had. He's no longer with us.
Yeah.
Had such an impressive take and so quick on his feet. So good.
I agree with you. I do miss the days when we could just, you know, agree to disagree and whatnot on politics. I mean, it just, I'm coming at it, not to get into personal life stuff or anything. I found that dating has been very difficult in that regard that, you know, And to be honest, if I'm like on an app and swiping, if somebody's got some sort of like, you know, that they're super into politics or they say like, you know, you need to vote or they list off like issues that they're into, it's an immediate turnoff. It's like there's so much more to life than caring about this issue or that issue. I move on from that.
For me, it was, and I'm no longer on the apps, but the it's I got turned off by the never Trumpers
mm-hmm.
and the always Trumpers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like Trump can do no wrong, and Trump's the devil.
Oh, because the always Trumpers, their whole profile is based entirely around that. And then the never Trumpers, it's this. It's like the derangement syndrome goes both ways on that one. You know, it's like, anyway, that's neither here nor there. But yeah, no, I wish we could get back to the day. I was always told growing up, there's two things that in pleasant company you don't discuss: politics and religion. And I just wish we could get back to that point in society again.
You know what? I agree with you in some ways, and I disagree with you in others. I think we need to get back to a place where I think the late 90s, early 2000s was the ideal time where you could have a conversation with somebody and agree to disagree, and you could still be friends.
Yeah.
And then it was an anomaly. I grew up very poor. So we had our poor white neighborhood was adjacent to the poor Hispanic neighborhood, and it was adjacent to the poor black neighborhood. And honestly, if you could play basketball and you had a halfway decent jumper and a decent crossover, you could go to any basketball court
and you'd be fine.
Make friends. And I'm still friends with these kids today because no one gave a shit.
Yep.
Then now I feel like we give a shit too much about skin color and the creed and all that bullshit.
Shit. I thought after Obama, we were in a post-racial world, though.
I think after Obama, we became the most racist that we've ever been in the history of the country. And I'm going back to slavery.
I see. It's definitely much more on everybody's mind.
Because you can't listen. I am not trying to get canceled. And
I was going to say, dude, we can move on from this if you want. But
I don't care so much about someone's skin color or their religion. I don't care at all. I have close friends that are Muslim. And when someone blows something up or kills somebody and they're Muslim, I don't hold it against the guy that I know is a good guy.
Right.
And he ends up being like, I'm sorry, my religion killed that person or blew that shit up. That wasn't. And I'm like, I know it wasn't you.
Yeah.
You're a good person.
I know. We've gotten away from the ability to judge a person by their character.
The content of their character.
Yep, that's 100%. Exactly it. So, yeah, we're definitely not living the dream these days. But
and listen, you know, there is a difference between somebody that was raised as a black person and someone that was raised as a white person. No, I don't think that their opportunities are any less. But culturally speaking, There's certain things that are unique to white people, and there's certain things that are unique to black people. And I love learning about the different cultures.
For sure.
So quick story about, I have a group of customers that are from Kenya.
Okay.
Maybe I told the story before. I don't know, but
I don't know.
They're from Kenya and we're doing a send-off party, and they say, we're going to do a roast for this guy, Mark. He's going to Kenya. He's starting a cigar store, a cigar lounge in Kenya. And they have no idea what a roast is. So everybody that gets up. So I start off, I'm sort of hosting.
Oh, so this is a comedic roast, not like a pig roast.
They had a goat, but that was a different thing.
Okay, all right.
So
either way.
It's comedic roast.
Okay, all right.
So I open things up, and I'm breaking Mark's balls about stuff I know about Mark, and people are laughing. And then the first guy gets up, and he ends his speech in tears about how good Mark's always been to him. And I take the mic from him and I go, holy shit, that was depressing. And I rip into Mark about a couple more things. The next guy gets up and it's even more heartfelt than the first one. The whole room is practically crying. So I get up and I'm whatever.
Yeah.
So this guy gets up and he says, listen, Mr. Jonathan has been very good to us. I think it's time that we induct him into our tribe. So I lean over to my Kenyan buddy, Patrick, and I go, what the fuck does that mean? He goes, well, we're going to have to pick a name for you. And I go, a name? And he goes, well, you know how we call Eddie Odish? Well, Odish means something in Kikuyu, their native tongue. And I'm like, all right, cool. So someone shouts out, let's call him Vege. And I go, what's Vege? He goes, Billy Goat. I go, vetoed. I'm not Billy Goat. He goes, you don't get to pick it. I go, fucking vetoed. Whatever the thing you have to say, Kikuyu, that says not that, let's move on. You say that right now. And he waves his hand like this. So then they say, Degwa. I go, what's Degwa? He goes, it means the bull. I go, I'll take that. He goes, you don't get to pick. I go, fucking second it right now. And he stands up and goes, I second Degwa. Someone else says, I third Degwa. So right at the end of this ritual, this guy, Sam, walks up. He's 6'4", and he's 230. He's just a massive man, and he holds out a silver platter, and on the platter is a testicle sliced into four pieces. I don't bat an eye. I grab the biggest piece of this testicle. I pop it in my mouth. I chew it exactly twice, and I swallow it as fast as I can, and I just try not to think about the gaminess, and I'm not thinking about gagging.
You know you're feeding the trolls at this point, right?
That's okay.
Okay.
The room goes electric. Dudes take their shirts off. They're swinging them. They're standing on the tables.
Now you're definitely feeding the trolls.
And I go, Pat, what just happened? And he goes, you fucked up. I'm like, how did I fuck up? I've been Kenyan for 6 fucking minutes.
Yeah.
How did I fuck up? And he goes, that was kidney. And that's reserved exclusively for the women.
Oh,
and I go,
no.
That wasn't testicle? And he goes, you ate it thinking it was testicle? I'm like, I don't know your culture. I'm trying to fit in here. You guys honor me with this new name, and I'm a Kenyan, and I'm honored, and I just want to fit in. And I ate the thing the guy fucking handed me. And you're saying it's kidney and it's women's food. He goes, don't worry. The fine won't be too much.
Oh, no.
I'm like, all right, these guys are fleecing me now. Like, I saw them in a different light. All right, I'm getting fleeced. I'm ready for this.
Uh-huh.
So Sam gets up on the microphone. He goes, as you guys know, Degwa ate the women's food, the kidney. We need to process his fine now. So how much is it, the going rate for a goat? Who bought the goat for today? And it was this other dude that ate the kidney. Who's Kenyan, who should have known better.
Yeah.
And he goes, oh, I paid 300. He goes, all right, the fine for the goat is assessed at 300. And he bangs a gavel. Where did he get the gavel? I have no idea. There was no gavel, but he bangs a gavel. I'm like, all right, I got set up. How much is it for the charcoal? It's $100. I'm like, I will supply the charcoal. Nope, you can't supply the charcoal. It's $100. How much to cook the goat? I go, I got this. I will cook the best goat you've ever had in your entire life. I have a smoker. It's all set. They go, nope, you can't cook the goat. We pay a guy for that. It's $100. So $500 assessment.
Oh, shit.
One by one, a different Kenyan stands up and vouches for $100. My assistant, Trevor, who was there, stands up for $100. It's down to $100 for me. I peel off a beaner. I put it on the table. Debt's paid. It's all set. At the end of the night, Mark comes up and says, this is the guy we're roasting. He says, we were just fucking with you. Here's your $100 back. There is no assessment. That was dirty pool. We don't play like that. And it was great.
Did you look at him and say, that's Mr. Degwa to you?
I should have. I'm instantly regretting my life.
I was going to say, Mr. Degwa. So, oh, fuck. Okay. Aside from Colin Quinn, what else have you been watching lately? I like the side story, though. That was good.
I'm going to give you the plug here because your big box store episode, I listened to twice.
Oh, shit.
It's very good. Very well done. You did your research. You were 100% spot on. And any retailer that hears that episode should heed your warning. The only thing I disagree with is having a $5 bin and having that available all the time. And not because I don't think the customers will do the right thing.
Yeah.
You will eventually create a mooch market. And if you do that even 4 times a year, or you have 4 times a year you make your dead product available, or once a year you do a sale like March Madness, in some way you need to rip that off like a Band-Aid, because the consumer will eventually become the mooch. And that's why most people don't do this.
Well, no, and that's fair. I only threw out the $5 bin idea basically as a way to move the dead product. But, you know, in hindsight, looking at, you know, talking to you about the sale and everything, the sale is a perfectly viable and probably even better option because, as you point out, it doesn't create that mooch culture that just, you know, permeates and people then never look to the regular product. They only look in the bargain bin.
Another thing that you could do is a blind grab bag. You put inside a brown paper bag, you put 10 cigars and you charge $50. And maybe you have, say, a private label brand for your store. And you put a couple of those in there. And then you put 7 dead cigars that of stuff you're trying to get rid of. And you sell that for $50. So that puts them at $5. They're blind. And then you have an advertisement opportunity when they look around your store and they don't see the other brands, but they see the 3 brands that you put in that you had for private label. That's another way to flush through product and not kill yourself on margin and also advertise for your own brands. And you don't have those available all the time. And you wait until after the transaction's over and you say, oh, by the way, we have these grab bags. You know, if you're interested, they're $50 and there's 10 cigars in there, or they're $25 and there's 5 cigars in there.
Gotcha.
Okay. And you treat it like an add-on, and your guys at the register, you know, once the guy's, not after the transaction, I'm sorry, after the guy's done his shopping, and you say, hey, listen, you want to add on $25, there's 5 cigars in this bag and no one knows what they are. Some of it's dead product, some of it's live product, but it's just a really good deal that we're offering this month. And then the guy knows it's only for this month. He can't come in and buy 50 grab bags. You know, you could put a limit at 2. There's lots of ways to be able to move through some dead product that it doesn't have to be just a straight $5 bin or have a sale like we do at March Madness. There's lots of other ways to be creative to blow through dead product.
Oh, for sure. I mean, so I don't know if it's everywhere, if it's just based in St. Louis, but there's a nonprofit here called Backstoppers, and what they do, and I'm sure they have things like this all over the place, but they raise money and they support the families of fallen first responders. So if a policeman, fireman, EMS, whatever falls in the line of duty, Backstoppers is one of the first people to reach out to the widow and say, okay, here's the deal. We're paying off.
Do you need cigars?
Well, no, we're paying off your house. We're paying off your bills. And your kids are covered through college, you know, that kind of thing. Like, we've got you. And so they raise money all the time. Well, to that point, there's a shop over here in the Hill neighborhood, which is like a little Italian neighborhood. And it's the Hill Cigar Company. And they have little 4-count grab bags on the counter. And it's product that admittedly probably moves slowly, if not. They're dead products that they're moving, but it's 4 cigars for $25 and the profits go to Backstoppers. So not only are you looking at it and you're like, hey, you know what? That's 4 cigars for $25. That's not a bad deal. But then when you see that extra little, oh, it's going to support the families of fallen first responders, it's just that much extra. They move through those all the time.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
It's not only, it's an awesome sentiment. And listen, Cigars for Warriors also has its place. And we talk about this on the after show this week where, you know, when should you, the consumer, go through your dead product and make room in your humidor so that you can buy the stuff you're into. And Cigars for Warriors is an easy donation. And honestly, because it's a 501c3, I think you as a person can get a tax deduction based on the amount that you paid for the cigars that you're donating.
Oh, that's nice. That's actually not a bad thought.
Especially we're in tax season. You can add that to your donation list of the value, and it's not a complete loss.
You just probably have to retain receipts.
Why?
Well, I don't know. I mean,
well, they'll give you a receipt for what you donated.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, that's so true. Okay, I'm saying
your,
that
there's
like,
your value.
Okay, all right. Because that's the thing. I'm like, eh. I keep my receipts because, you know, well.
Cigars are a tax write-off for you completely.
Oh, for sure. It's research and development.
Yes. But, and gifts.
Oh.
Don't forget gifts.
I didn't even think about gifts. Okay. No, that's not
a bad thought. I also save my receipts from the liquor store.
Nice. Just saying. I've never done that either, but anyway, well, I as I said earlier, I spent the weekend with my kids, so I've watched a lot of Clifford the Big Red Dog this weekend. Specifically the episode about the potluck party. He wanted to watch that on repeat practically. So, I know all about the potluck party that the little girl that Elizabeth something, I don't remember.
So I think so, you need a CO2 Clifford detector, because I think the CO2 is a little, or the carbon monoxide is a little high in your house, because you were willing to sit through it. Your kid wanted to. So there's a problem there.
You know what? There's a problem. It's what you do. It's just what you do. So, but yeah. So I did manage to get through most of your episode from Saturday this morning before we got on, and I'm trying to, no, wait, I finished it on YouTube. That's right. And so, you guys did the survey, and I just want to point out for the record that the question about other cigar podcasts that you listen to, you know, I came in third, none came in second, and then obviously the Ashholes came in first. I kind of contend that if none was the answer, then that means that I then take the second place spot.
You know what? That's an interesting take, because I took it as people would rather listen to nothing than listen to your show. But I like your take better.
I mean,
it's nicer.
I look on the bright. It's nicer. I look on the bright side of it, and yeah. So I'm gonna take it as that I took the second place spot, because, you know, none I don't feel is a proper answer.
I think you earned it.
Yeah, I think so.
I think you earned it.
Anyway, well, why don't we go ahead and do this now?
Guess what, motherfucker?
Time for three cigars we smoked and enjoyed this week. And that's what I was prepping for earlier when I was looking on my phone. So what have you smoked and enjoyed this week?
I am smoking the ever-loving shit out of the McAuliffe Black Toro.
Yeah.
I know it's cigar of the year, blah, 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 but I was on the cigar from day one, and it slowly weaseled its way not only into my regular rotation, but into my multi smokes per day rotation. And just so people know, I'm good for 6 to 8 a day. Sometimes I smoke all day at work, and I come home into my little Shangri-La that I'm building, and I kick on the heater and I rip one for me, just to sit back and chill out. And when I get a TV in here and I can watch my YouTube videos, it's going to be, I'm never leaving this room.
Nice. Nice. So my first one, is one that I actually smoked in the car, and it was, the Intemperance Volstead in the Bellicoso size. Holy shit. That thing was a freaking smokestack, and it was so, like, it was very flavorful. I really dug it.
Skip launched that cigar with us, two guys, and the pre-release cigar had a different wrapper.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed the different wrapper, and then the regular one came out, and I was like, all right, this is one of the ways where you know a manufacturer actually has it going on. Better burn, more flavor from the other wrapper. And they look, excuse me, they look almost identical, but the new wrapper that he picked was, that was the right choice for him.
Gotcha. So what was your second one?
Well, I smoked a Byron Distinguidos at the tail end of the March Madness sale, just to kind of celebrate that this was it. This was the last hour. It's our last hurrah. And well, man, was that outstanding.
That's nice. What was the Byron that was in the show pack? God, I feel like it was maybe December.
Yeah, that was the Byron 1850 Grand Bouquet.
I'm still sitting on that.
$65 cigar.
Yeah.
Listen, given how many lectins you consume and given your current diet, where you prefer pasta over meat, you should smoke that sooner rather than later.
Okay.
Because some jackass is going to take two puffs of that and say, you know what? I'm really not into cigars, and throw it away, and you will have not enjoyed it. So you should smoke that shit sooner rather than later.
Oh, no. That one's not getting given away to anybody. That one's sitting...
No. You'll be dead.
You'll have died, and someone's
going to inherit your collection
or buy it
from an estate sale, and they're going to be like, oh, this motherfucker had this dark cigar. I think I like dark cigars. They're going to take two puffs and go, oh, I don't like cigars. They're going to throw it away, and you will have missed out on smoking it. That cigar will change your life, and it will change how you evaluate cigars forever.
Well, that's the thing, is I didn't, no offense, normally I like smoking along with you guys. That one I didn't want to, because I wanted to actually focus on it. And I'm like, I don't really know if I want, you know, because I'll be honest, that when I fire that thing up, that will be the most expensive cigar I've ever smoked. All like right,
so
MSRP wise.
You have that in your humidor.
Yeah.
And we're going back and forth about what to smoke today. And I'm telling you, I'm smoking Alfonso number 4.
And I grab a Brick House Santo Porciento.
And you grab a fucking Brick House.
But dude,
you had a chance to really celebrate today.
I truly don't want to just mindlessly smoke it. I want something, or I want to take the opportunity where I really have the opportunity to concentrate fully on it.
Yeah, you could have smoked the first half on the show, and then you could be less long-winded, end the show early, and then fucking finish it.
Oh, come on.
On your time.
You and me, less long-winded,
ridiculous.
I was going to say.
Oh, speaking of which, I want to finish my little Villiger report.
Oh, okay.
The Cat Williams,
I'm sorry,
Joe Rogan
episode. I didn't realize
episode.
You still had more.
No, that's okay. I watched the Cat Williams, Joe Rogan episode, and I watched the Cat Williams episode on the Shay Shay podcast, where he eviscerated Hollywood and pointed out all the places where you see black comedians wearing dresses and exactly what their deal is. And he doubled down on Rogan, and you've got Rogan, who's already a conspiracy theorist, with Cat Williams, who's a conspiracy theorist and well-read. And these two motherfuckers just go at it, and they go deeper and deeper. And each time one of them talks, it's another shovel full. Like, you can't dig yourself out of a hole unless you go all the way to China. And they did. Oh, it was fantastic. And I'm not even saying I believe it all.
Yeah.
I'm just saying it was fantastic.
Interesting. Rogan's one of those shows that every once in a while I can catch it. His shows tend to go so long, though, that inevitably what happens is I have to break it up into chunks. And if I make it back to it, then I'm lucky.
I don't listen to a single podcast of his that's less than 3 hours.
Okay.
If it's less than 3 hours, that means he lost interest and tried to make it go longer. And they always come across that way. If it's more than 3 hours, he was interested. It held his attention.
And he
it was a good guest. And those are the ones I listen to. And Kat, I think, is like 3 hours and 25 minutes.
Okay.
Remarkable. And Cat Williams turned him down to do the small room or the big room in his mothership.
Okay.
Because he does arenas, and Rogan calls him out in the next podcast, which I'm halfway through now, about saying, like, this guy's missing the boat because he only does arenas. But Cat Williams was like, yeah, I'm not doing the small club with 200 people. And he still was on Rogan's podcast.
Interesting.
Just remarkable.
Interesting. Well, going back to the three cigars we smoked and enjoyed this week. So did you do your second one?
Not yet.
Okay. What's your second one?
My second one is the Short Robusto by JFR Lunatic in the Habano. I have a box I've been sitting on for a couple years. And they have they're already good, but when you sit on cigars and you age them the way I do, which is a little dry boxing for a couple months and then back in humidification, they just keep getting better and better and better. And these are just remarkable.
Okay.
So I'm cheating because you can't just go out and buy them. You have to buy them and then do the work. But I did the work. And I'm enjoying the shit out of these.
Hey, that's okay, because I've been really high on this box of Warhawk Rebellious that I was sitting on for like 4 years, and I've been very slowly making my way through those because I don't want to burn through them super quick.
Well, that one actually needed it from the beginning. Those came out so young because they were a little bit behind the eight ball on their production. That one of the few times where packaging arrived before the cigars did.
Okay.
So they needed to get the cigars out. So those came in a little young, and it needed time.
I liked them then.
Well, your palate's fucked up.
All right. Well,
there was too much ammonia then.
That was 4 years ago, too. So, you know, I'd only been smoking for like a year and a half at that point.
Fair enough. That explains it.
But
they must be unbelievable now.
Oh, dude, the spice level on those things is just out of this world. It's great. But my second one actually is one that I got from the fine folks at J.C. Newman. They sent a nice little care package, and I had El Baton Bellicoso.
Love that cigar.
Right?
Love it.
And
chocolatey, strong, a little pepper. Amazing draw.
And everybody, you know, and here's the thing. They've done a really good job lately of rebranding and reworking some old brands. You know, the Perla del Mar, and then now the El Baton, and probably others that I'm forgetting. But it doesn't feel like the El Baton gets quite the love that the Perla del Mar gets. And, dude, the El Baton is fantastic.
Well, here's going back to that 36-inch thing. Perla del Mar is four sizes. It hits 30, I believe it's 32 inches across. But if you merchandise them properly, it's 32 over 32 over 32. And with that block, you can't not see it.
Yeah.
So Perla del Mar gets the love because they have a lot more facings. El Baton is four facings. That's it. It's all the original sizes. The packaging looks exactly the same. First box of cigars I ever bought, by the way.
Oh, there you go.
Full box. They're back when they were 40-count cabs.
Okay.
And they did a great job with the re-blend of capturing the original chocolate and spice, but they brought the nicotine down just a touch.
Okay.
Because that original one, you could see into the fucking future. It was so strong. So they tampered that a bit. And they made a better product, period.
Perfect. All right. So what's your third one?
Well, my third one is, I'm just going to say it. It's Aladino Corojo Reserve. I'm wearing the hat.
It's all right.
It's one of my go-tos, although it's going to see a hit in sales this year because the McAuliffe Black Toro is taking up an awful lot of real estate, not only in my home humidor, but in my regular cigar rotation.
Oh, man.
Honestly and truly, it's the price point.
Do you realize you may have just cost somebody a job because Justo's not going to be able to afford all of his staff at that point because you buy so damn many of those things?
Justo's going to do just fine.
That's like a big corporate hit right there.
Well, in my area, he has a broker, so whatever the broker sells, the broker sells. He gets paid on commission. So, the Corojo Reserve is still firing on all cylinders. I still love it. The McAuliffe Black just comes in at a better price point, and it's like, if I'm going to smoke three a day,
I get it.
I can save enough for a whole nother cigar tomorrow. And how many times can you do that? I can do that always because I could afford to smoke Corojo Reserves to begin with. If McAuliffe Black suddenly just stops being as good, I'll go back. But
no,
I'm down to two a day of the Corojo Reserves and three of the McAuliffe Blacks.
Oh my God.
And I save the other two or three cigars, sometimes four, for new product that comes in or revisiting other stuff.
It's like I don't even know you anymore. I don't know.
I understand.
So speaking of go-to cigars, I'm going to go ahead and go with one of my go-tos because I've smoked quite a few of them in the last, you know, 5 or 6 days. And that's the Perdomo Habano Sun Grown in the Churchill size. I had some reward points at my local Total Wine, and they were plentiful enough that I was able to go in and get a really good deal on a box of those. So that worked out really well. So that's
my only complaint is I don't like the Churchill size.
Okay.
For two reasons. One, you're smoking one cigar for too long.
Yeah, but see, when I'm in the car for an hour and a half, I don't mind that.
Yeah. So you're smoking for the first 2 inches to put smoke in the air, and then it gets to be interesting.
Yeah.
So that's the other part, is that there's not enough flavor changes in a Churchill. If it was me making a Churchill, I would make it so that the consumer smoked an inch, flavor change. 2 more inches, flavor change. 2 more inches, flavor change. And now you're down to the nub, and you've got the tar built up, and now the cigar's starting to get good again. So essentially another flavor change. But what everybody does is the first 2 inches, it's just nothingness. And then you get to where it pops at the 5-inch mark. I just wish there was a little more oomph.
No, that's fair. That's fair. You know, and to my, you know, back to my point about the driving, it's like, you know, when I'm driving, I don't, again, it's kind of like we were talking about the Byron. I don't want something that I have to actually fully concentrate on. I want something that I just know it, I like it, I can fire it up, and I can concentrate on driving, but at the same time, have that cigar for, you know, both enjoyment and keeping me awake, and we can go from there. But, yeah, I see what you're saying. So
listen, for the purpose that you're using it, a Churchill makes sense.
Yeah.
I get such an aggressive discount on my cigars because I work for a cigar store.
Yeah.
I just smoke 2 Robustos.
Yeah. See, my problem, I can't drive and light a cigar. I can cut a cigar all day while driving, especially considering the SV holds, you know, the stuff, the schmuckus inside. But
that's the best part.
You know, but lighting a cigar properly while driving, I mean, that's a recipe for an accident. And so it's one of those things. Am I pulling over 2 or 3 times to fire up Robustos, or am I just going to go with one longer cigar? I won't do a Gordo, or not a Gordo, one of the fucking gigantic ring gauge ones. I know a lot of truckers really appreciate the 70 ring gauge plus, you know, because sure, it's one of those things they can fire it up and they can go 3+ hours on the same cigar. I just don't, mouth feels just an issue there. I don't like the bigger ring gauge.
I love a good mouthfeel.
I mean, I get that. I've heard that about you. So,
you started that rumor, you dink.
Holy shit. Okay. Well, this is the point with all Zooms that I have to go video only, which, by the way, I want to clarify. Past episode, I heard Dave and Ed talking about, why does he do the video only? It's because of my board. I only have 3 buttons available for, like, you know, drops. And when I plug the board into, in this case, the iPad, so that I can record the audio from the Zoom. If I didn't, I'd have 6 available. But the channel that the iPad takes up, those 3 buttons go away. So in order for me to have the other remaining drops, I have to stop the audio, switch the buttons while we do the video only, and then come back. So that it's
so
all a technical.
You can't just get an iPhone and have a bank of buttons.
I do, but I can't plug in both the iPad and the phone at the same time. I only have the one port, the auxiliary out, for me to record.
Buy
your audio.
A new mixer.
Well, I mean, I don't have Cigar Authority budget like, you know, you guys do.
It's like $190.
My board was like $400.
You overpaid. if you need advice on DJ equipment or mixing equipment, you know who to talk to. You just tap me in or call Ed Sullivan. We'll get you set up. Okay. You have a laptop?
I do have a laptop. I need to replace that too. That fucking thing, it's, oh my
no,
God.
No, that's fine. Replace the laptop. Get yourself a shitty Windows machine instead of going for your balls on a Mac. But
I like then my Mac.
Oh, then get the 0% interest 12-month.
Oh, yeah.
Friggin'.
Yeah. Well,
the Mac that I'm broadcasting on right now, it was $2,400.
Yeah.
Split up into 12 payments.
Yeah, I'm in the process of looking at that because I need it not just for, I mean, realistically, I could do the podcast stuff on a PC, no problem. It's the, it's all the newspaper stuff, my layout and everything. It's just so much easier on the Mac, but such is life. Anyway,
well, you can write it off completely.
Oh yeah, no, this is a business expense. It's just a matter of whether or not the business has the money for it. Let me tell you, there's not a lot of money in newspapers these days.
Sell more ads.
That's easier said than done when you got Mark Zuckerberg out there undercutting you at any moment.
Watch Andy Elliott on YouTube. It'll change your life.
Okay. Andy Elliott.
It'll change your life. Andy Elliott. He will change your life. He's the guy that, so we shifted our focus. We talked about it the last time I was on your show. We shifted our focus from the six steps of the sale to Andy Elliott's mentality of mentoring your customer.
Okay.
So if you, as a business that is a newspaper, if you mentor your customer into understanding that there still are these older people that like to read something in their hands,
for sure,
versus just having some sort of digital footprint, the older customer has the money. And this is the mindset of this Andy Elliott guy of overcoming the objections with more facts and mentoring your customer so that they come around to see it in the most truthful way possible, which, let's face it, the guy that's retired and can afford to live with his wife of 50 years without working, this is the guy every business should be going after.
Oh, for sure.
And what? Do you think he's on Facebook? Because the answer is no. His wife might be. He's not.
Yep.
He reads the newspaper. He looks forward to that newspaper coming in. Every day it comes in, he knows exactly when and he knows what time. And believe me, he's up and hears the newspaper being launched to his front porch. He knows when it happens and he can't wait to read it. This is where you need to be with those customers.
Well, I don't disagree with you. I make a lot of good points about Facebook and how, you know, when you post to your page, only 16% of your audience max is going to see it unless you boost that post and put money behind it.
Well, unless you're me.
Well, okay.
I get 25 to 29% engagement.
Oh, look at you.
But I cheat.
Oh.
I make myself live a very interesting life so that when someone sees it, they love it. Like when I post the pictures of this, when it's done,
yeah,
people, I'll get 250, 300 likes on comments, but I really did the fucking work to do it.
Well, I mean, yeah. See, that's the problem.
All of this work is so that I can enjoy this room, but also in my mind, I'm like, all right, I took the before pictures, here's the after pictures, and let's have at it.
See, I'm not a handy individual, so like me buying a fixer-upper house is just not a prospect that appeals.
I wasn't handy when I bought this house either, but when you see the first bill of, I had the plumbers look at I had a drain that was leaking, a house drain.
Yeah.
$9,000.
Holy shit. But see.
Yeah, I learned how to fucking glue PVC together.
Well, now.
In about two YouTube videos and $17 later, okay, in material.
But see, now your brother's handy, though.
Not plumbing, but yes, he is.
Well, yeah.
So no, he's coming over later tonight because this window,
yeah,
needs to be measured so I can buy a vertical slider that has the security locks on it so I could have the window open for ventilation but not risk somebody coming into the house,
well, yeah,
through the window. So I want that type of window there. And so he's going to come over and teach me how to do it. And he's going to point out all the shit I did wrong on this tongue and groove. And you know what? It's too fucking late because it's already done.
Uh-huh. It's like, well, it looks okay to me.
He's going to teach me about expansion jams so I can cover the plaster that's on the side here. And I'll get everything I can out of him. And for my pocket door, I hired a handyman, not my brother. I hired a handyman to come over every other week and tell me the next thing to do. He didn't touch a single thing. He just, all right, this is the next thing. And at the end, when I owed him the $50, he was like, I feel funny taking the $50 because I didn't do anything. And I said, all right, here, take this box of cigars. I hit a $50 bill in the box. The second row. So it took him a couple weeks to get there. And whatever, I just learned how to do it, and it's not hard.
Okay. All right. Well, now we're going to go to video only real quick. And we're back on the audio.
And that's why butt plugs require copious amounts of lube, because otherwise it's just painful.
You don't want to get them stuck.
You don't. Mm-mm. In or out.
Let's be real. The EMS people, they're not, or EMT, they're not going to be polite to you, you know.
And forget about ATM with those guys. I've asked for it, and they just won't do it.
I have a funny story, and I may have told this on the show before. But so back in a previous life, I worked in politics. And I'm on a conference call with another strategist and the candidate. And we're talking about putting together a website as kind of an opposition dump about this candidate's opponent. And we're talking about how all of the family members of this, of the opponent's family, are all employed by different units of government. And, you know, they're just involved in everything. Like, one was a congressman, one was a president of a community college, this one was a state representative, and there's more. And, you know, so we're trying to come up with a clever name for this website, a clever URL. And the other strategist throws out, what about the idea of Costello Family ATM? You know, because meaning, you know, automated teller machine, right? And so this candidate, she just immediately, no, we can't do that. And we're like, why not? She goes, ATM. And we're like, both me and this other strategist, we're both just like, what's wrong with that? And she goes, well, you guys know what that means, right? And we're like, no, why don't you tell
us? No, we're not in that world, lady.
And I respond like, automated teller machine. And she goes, oh, to which we're both just like, what did you think it meant? No, it's okay. No, seriously, tell us, what did you think that meant? Well, ass to mouth. And I lost my fucking mind, dude. That was the first time I had encountered that. It was the first time the other strategist encountered that. And we're just losing our mind. And she's all embarrassed and everything else. And we moved on. We didn't use that one. But holy shit, it was educational. I'll say that much. It was funny.
That's awesome.
And I actually still suspect that she was a high-priced prostitute. She was her profession was a business consultant, and, you know, she was making like six figures a year doing, you know, business consulting, but we never knew any of her clients. She never, like, she always was available to do stuff. So it's like, when do you do this consulting work? And, so we suspected maybe that she was a high priced prostitute or something, but neither here nor there.
Just a regular one.
I don't know. She had a really nice house, and her husband was like a chef.
How was her ass?
I wouldn't put my mouth on it, but you know, it wasn't bad.
I'm not exactly sure that that's what ATM stands for.
Ass to mouth.
Yeah, I'm not. I'm pretty sure it has to do with some sort of penetration and then in the mouth.
Oh. Well, anyway, then I may have just learned more off of this story there. I don't know. Anyway, we'll move on. You know what? This is a very appropriate time to play this. This would normally be the time that I give some information about my monthly cigars, but I've hired that out this week, so take it away.
My Monthly Cigars is a premium cigar subscription service. It comes in a variety of different size boxes at affordable prices. Use offer code PULPIT and get free shipping on your first box and 20% off any items in the online store at mymonthlycigars.com.
That's offer code PULPIT. Thanks.
Different size boxes.
You know,
giggity.
It seemed like for the longest time, anytime we were talking about anything related to butts or poop, it always then prompted the My Monthly ad. So it just seemed like an appropriate thing to do. By the way, for those of you who enjoy coffee, he does have the fucking good coffee, which I have been drinking out of my little travel mug here. And that comes in a variety of flavors that you can get over there at the website. And I have it on fairly good account. I don't want to, like, break any news or anything like that. But I have it on fairly good account that those people that are coming to the New England Cigar Expo should probably be looking forward to trying some fucking good coffee.
They probably should.
Yeah.
They should look forward to it. Whether it's going to happen or not, I don't know, but they should look forward to it.
Well, like I said, I don't want to break any news or anything, so I'll let you guys do that. So yeah, that news all came about, you know, last week.
Yeah, it's such a big event. So I introduced David to the tent, and I said, they're open to cigar smoking, and we're looking for a place to do the anniversary party. And he shit all over the tent and was like, no fucking way. This is not high-end enough for the anniversary party. It's not what we're looking for. And then 2 weeks later, he goes, okay, we're throwing an expo, and we're going to do our anniversary party the first night and then do the other thing the second day. And I'm like, wait, you said it wasn't high-end enough for the first night.
Uh-huh.
No. If it's an expo, it's okay to be in a tent. Okay.
So I have a question, and you may or may not even know the answer to this. I don't know why I did it, but for some reason, recently, I went back super, super, super far into the history of your show on iTunes, like way back to the freaking beginning. And I don't remember why. I can't remember why I did that. I had a reason. And in one of the episodes fairly early, I saw reference to a New England Cigar Expo. Did Dave do this before?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. I'll have to dig back, unless maybe Apple was like screwing up and showing me show notes from a current show on a old show, but I thought I...
That's more likely.
It's possible, because, I mean, you know, glitches abound, but I don't know why. I meant to ask that, but well, you know, as much as I'm looking forward to the New England Cigar Festival, I want to let everybody know that the ticketing page for Pulpit Fest 2024 is now available. And so if you go over to eventbrite.com, it's B-R-I-T-E, eventbrite.com, and you just click search. Where is it? There we go. You click search, and I'm doing it right now just to make sure that this is accurate. I probably should have done that prior to this.
No worries. I have all day. I'm on vacation.
Now, why in the hell is it?
And I think officially I'm drunk.
Well, there you go. Why is it doing? There it is. Yeah, so if you click search and you just search for Pulpit Fest, all one word, you should be able to find, well, that looks like shit. You should be able to find the page there.
If I went to events, I would totally go to Pulpit Fest.
Oh, I mean, I get it.
But I don't go to events.
Why not?
I don't like them. This is going to sound a little goofy.
Okay.
I'm totally an introvert.
What?
I recharge when I'm by myself, no one around, and I just have a podcast or I have music on the Bluetooth speaker, and I'm just chilling by myself. That's when I'm at my happiest.
I mean, I get that.
When I have to be in front of people or I'm performing or whatever,
nobody's asking.
It's a drain.
Nobody's asking if you have to perform.
If I have to go to an event, it's a performance.
Okay. Well, anyway.
And I only go out into crowds.
Yeah.
If I'm being paid to do so.
Okay.
Well, otherwise, I would rather not be paid and just be by myself.
That's fair enough. I mean, I get that. But for those of you who are interested in Pulpit Fest, head on over to eventbrite.com, search for Pulpit Fest. You'll find it. Tickets are free, but we just need the headcount. It's one of those things.
Why are tickets free?
Because, by God, I have to, you know, I want to, it's a party for my listeners, man. I want to make it nice for the people. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, but your podcast is the third most popular, fourth most popular podcast, fourth to none.
I was going to say, wait a minute. I was going to say, don't be counting none in there.
I mean, that's worth something.
I mean, I get it, but you know, I'm also asking people to travel to Florida this year. So, you know, there's expense involved.
Why Florida?
Because Ken down in Ash and Ale in Palm Coast, Florida, has graciously agreed to host this year. And this place is really, really nice. It's in this facility called the European Village. So it's like three buildings that kind of make a triangular shape. It's got a great courtyard area, lots of bars and restaurants in the bottom floors. And he's got his little cigar shop. So we're going to have a great outdoor-indoor thing going on, and it'll be fun.
So next year, hit me up. Two Guys Smoke Shop Salem will host your
fest. Oh, shit. Oh. See? And it'll be a month before the New England Cigar Festival, or Expo.
I'm just saying.
My God. Look at that. Well, I like the idea.
If you're not willing to charge, I am. If you don't see the value in you, I do.
You know, I see the value in me, but I just like hanging out with my listeners. They're fun people. It's a nice party. We've got all kinds of stuff planned. We're talking like a scavenger hunt, and we've got some special guests that are coming up. Because that's the thing, Miami's only 4 hours south, so you know it's easy for some of these guys to travel up. And
you know what Shane Gillis would say about what I've heard so far about your fest?
What's that?
It's gay.
That son of a bitch. It's not. It's the most straight and heterosexual. No, anyway,
it's not. It's not
totally
at all.
Totally.
You actually made it sound more appealing to me. That's how I knew.
Oh, dear God. Dear God. No, it's been nice. I've actually seen...
You know what? I could see myself going to that.
It's been nice. I've actually seen some back and forth between listeners talking about, hey, I'm renting an Airbnb. It's got room for eight. Who wants to share? You know, that kind of thing.
How many other dudes would like to share this room with me?
I don't know about that. I mean, some people are bringing their families down because it's a nice Florida trip, you know? So we're only an hour and a half from Orlando, so they can go off and, you know, praise at the altar of the cult of the mouse while, you know, we're over here smoking cigars.
How is that not the gayest thing you've said so far in the podcast?
Oh, dude, my ex-wife was a what they call a Disney adult. And let me tell you, I am not a Disney person. It is a straight up cult, man. These people that are like, I know exactly what food stand sells churros and Dole Whip. And, you know, did you know that this ride is shut down for a period of time because of this and blah? It's fucking ridiculous.
That is ridiculous.
Have you not encountered a Disney adult yet?
There are some in my close proximity.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a cult, dude. Like
Ed, like, our buyer's wife, does the booking for Disney. And she does the booking so that she can go like 37 times a year for free.
Well, but she at least works for them, you know?
She's just feeding the beast, man.
True. That's true.
It's not cool.
No, I know. I mean, let me tell you, my ex-wife, she lives, you know, here in Southern Illinois, and I know last year she and my son had season passes to Disney World in Florida, and I'm thinking, you live in Illinois. What are you doing? But whatever, you know, such is life. I've been plenty of times. I don't need to go again. So, although Epcot's fun, you get to drink around the world. You got to take out a mortgage to do it, but you know, yeah.
And just hear me out on this. For about 3 weeks worth of work and some measuring two or three times and cutting once, You could just have yourself a Shangri-La of cigar smoking.
This is true.
And after like 3 days, it's free.
This is true. I mean,
compared to being at Epcot. So I could just,
I'm just saying, if I had to go to a Disney park,
I could just drink this scotch right here.
Holy shit, you got a new one.
It could be free. No, this is not a new one. I peed in it. I was, honestly, looking up close, I was panicking because I wasn't sure.
I was so close to going ahead and making that joke, and I was like, no, no, and then you did it.
I did it.
Oh, well,
I didn't know if it was socially acceptable to just be like, can you pause the podcast? I have to pee so bad. So I just dropped trowel with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 windows in this room. And I just hoped
you're in your house
that the couch railing was high enough that the neighbors didn't call the cops.
You're in your house. That's all that matters.
And honestly, if the cops show up, I'm going to be like, dude, I'm just drinking the scotch right here, and I'll drink it right in front of them. Not even scared.
I mean, the first time it's you know, supposed to be, what, sterile. After that is when it gets bad.
How many times have you drank your own urine?
Never, but it's one of those, like, you know, survival tips. It's like, you can drink the first time. After that, it's bad.
Do you think I would get drunker if I drank that urine?
I mean, there might be some alcohol in it.
I'll let you know how it goes.
Okay. All right. Keep me posted. Well, in terms of the socials, I'm on Instagram at The Cigar Pulpit. I'm also on Facebook, where we have the Pulpit Parishioners group. And I did pin the link to the Eventbrite page on there. So if you're in that group and you want to get your tickets, just look in the featured post section on that, and you can get in on that. I'm on Twitter/X and YouTube, where you can check out the bottle of Mr. Jonathan's pee.
It's not that great the second time around.
The pee?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm not saying it's going to be great the second time around. I'm just saying that, you know.
I was kind of hoping it would be like.
You can do it.
A double malt scotch, but it wasn't. It was.
No.
It was like pee.
Very ammonia-ish. Yeah. You got to watch out for kidney infections if you've got too much ammonia going on.
It's not so much that it was ammonia. It just was like salty and disgusting.
God.
It was like salty Chinese pea pods, if that makes sense.
Like edamame.
Exactly. It was edamame.
Edamame. Holy fuck. Where are you on social media?
I am on the Facebooks. Jonathan, Mr. J. Barbeau, B-A-R-B-E-A-U. I am on as Mr. Jonathan, and I'm on the MeWe's as Mr. Jonathan.
I'm on the MeWe. I just don't get on there too often. I need to get on there more.
I also have a website, MrJonathanIsMyDJ.com. If you're anywhere close to interested in swing dancing, that's all I do. I got offered some serious money to take up DJing again. And I said, no fucking way. I literally could just be the DJ for the Roma restaurant. And I said, I'm sorry, Brett. I'm out. I'm not doing it.
It's just one more thing. One more commitment.
It's not even that. I am not dealing with people anymore. When it's my students and they paid to be in a class, I can abuse the shit out of them.
Yeah.
And I can just do it my way. And it's my way or the highway. But if I'm DJing, there has to be a level of customer service with the music, and I'm not doing it.
No.
I'm not doing it.
That's fair.
I'm not.
You just don't want to hear Celebration by Kool and the Gang ever again.
If that were the thing, I would do it. Oh. I love that song.
Yeah.
I love it.
Oh, God. I'm over it. I've heard it entirely too much in my life. I'm over it.
It's one of those songs that's a good song that's overplayed.
Oh,
but it's a good song, and I can tolerate it. And I just had this conversation with this girl I'm seeing. She said, initially, I was on my way to a gig, and she goes, do you take requests? And I go, yeah, I take requests. She goes, well, why did you say it like that? I go, well, I don't play them unless I was going to play them anyways.
It's like, yeah.
And she goes, well, that's bad customer service. But the person wants to hear it, and they're the customer. And I go, well, they're not my customer. My customer hired me to play the gig. These people came to the gig and thought, oh, I could be a DJ. And then they asked for this obscure Beck song that I might even like. I might like the Beck song.
Yeah.
But it's going to kill the dance floor because no one's ever heard of it.
It's going to kill the room.
I take the requests and I don't play them because that guy is not as good as I am. I'm the best one.
See,
that's why I got the gig.
I'm that guy that messes with the TouchTunes jukebox. I actually was just over at, there's this Mexican restaurant just across the river. And they have a TouchTunes in their bar. And it feeds the music for the whole restaurant. So the whole time it's playing the, like, you know, the typical Mexican restaurant, you know, mariachi.
Did you Rickroll these motherfuckers?
Oh, I didn't Rickroll them. I played Afternoon Delight by the cast of Anchorman. So, like, it's like, you know, mariachi shit. And then it's like right into fucking Will Ferrell and the gang singing Afternoon Delight. And then right back into mariachi shit.
So good.
It was amazing. So then, near the end of my meal, I enjoyed that so much, I wanted to do another one. And so my second one that I did was the Muppets singing Bohemian Rhapsody. And let me tell you, when Animal gets to the part that he's all, mama, 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 it just kills. It just fucking killed.
Yeah, so I want to be the guy who plays that, but I don't want to be the guy who is someone gets to play that.
Okay.
So I'll do it, but I won't do it if it's someone else's idea. I tap out.
Last year.
That said, if Brett called me and was like, I got this wedding booked and the DJ bailed, how quickly can you be here? Yeah, I'll be there.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's an emergency.
Because he's my friend and I'll help him.
For sure.
I'm not doing it like as my regular thing anymore.
I gotcha. Last year on St. Patrick's Day, I'm sitting up at this bar and I'm enjoying life. And I just start hearing.
Meaning you're drunk on green beer?
And Irish car bombs. But yeah. And so.
Same thing.
Basically. And so I just keep hearing fucking coming, the Dropkick Murphys, the, you know, coming down to Boston or whatever it is. And it's like constant.
Shipping up to Boston.
That's it. That's the one. And I'm just like, it's just constant. So I decide I'm going to mix it up, and I throw on Amazing Grace on the bagpipes. And
amazing.
Fucking, I watched that bar, the whole mood of it just drop to the floor. You got people sitting there just mourning loved ones and whatnot. And then as soon as it's over, fucking shipping out to Boston comes right back on, and everybody's right back to normal. But for those few minutes, I controlled the room, and it was amazing.
So magical. And that's the reason why I don't take requests. Well, I take them, but I don't play them. But I don't want someone having that level of control other than me, because I can be trusted.
Yeah.
These motherfuckers cannot be trusted.
And then the best part about it's all on the app, so nobody knows who actually played that shit.
Because these motherfuckers are you. And
exactly.
You can't be trusted. Played Amazing Grace.
Oh, dude, it was so brilliant. It kicked in and the fucking bagpipes are going and I'm just like, oh, I was loving it. It was amazing.
After the podcast, go ahead and listen to Annie DeFranco's version of Amazing Grace and it will blow your mind. You'll actually listen to it as a song, not Amazing Grace. You'll be like, I need to hear this song again.
That song,
it's so good.
It just gets me right here every time. Like, I just can't help it. So, admittedly, I took myself down by doing it too, but
this is Nick Miller.
I need to do it.
He's completely sober. I'm telling you as Drunk Jonathan, which if you have a problem with my behavior right now, you take it up with me as Drunk Jonathan another time. Sober Jonathan won't remember this.
That's the beauty of it being recorded, is that it's always there.
I'm not listening to it.
There you go. Oh, shit. Well, I have finished my Brick House Ciento Por Ciento. I didn't even talk about it. We haven't even talked about yours. Like, you can get, you know, what's up
Dude,
with yours?
this is so fucking good. And right now is where it starts to shine and the podcast is ending. So I'm going to be able to do exactly what I love doing, smoking by myself.
There you go.
No one watching. And just enjoying the shit out of this final third on this Alfonso number 4. It's so amazing.
Perfect. I dug my brick house. It was good. Like I said, it's like a brick house that knows somebody. And speaking of which, I want to give a special thanks to listener Seth, because let me just make sure. I need to get the exact notes as to what it was he sent me. He got a deal on some brick house Dragonfire. And he got the Jose Gaspar, the Gasparilla cigars that they put out down there in Tampa. And he sent me some of those. And I haven't had a chance. They've been sitting in my humidor. I haven't smoked one yet. But I really want to thank him for thinking of me. That was very nice.
So if you had a candle that had the genuine essence of cedar.
Okay.
And a back note of oak. And you blew that candle out and you could en masse absorb that aroma. That's the flavor that I'm at right now.
I can
cedar and oak from a candle being blown out, and it's just amazing.
Nice. Well, it's amazing. I can tell you've got the aroma going because it is. I mean, it's not like thick to where I can't see you, but it is definitely hazier
fucking
now.
Cloudy
than
in here.
Than it was when we started.
And so. It ain't just the windows being smoked out. I know this needs to be replaced, and it will be, but. Yeah, this is great.
Yeah. Well, good. I'm glad for you. So, well, dude, seriously, thank you so much for taking time out. I know it was last minute, and I know you're on vacation, so it was greatly appreciated that you came on with me today.
Absolutely my pleasure, and keep up the good work, my man.
Well, I appreciate that. So, well, guys, this has been another sermon from the Cigar Pulpit. I'm Nick, and that's Mr. Jonathan taking a drink.
You goddamn right.
Stay safe. Stay bonerific. See, I remembered from last time.
So great.
I remembered from last time. You need to come up with a clever acronym for Chubbs, by the way. So that this like new cigar smoker thing that you guys were talking about on Saturday's show can be a thing and actually be called Chubbs.
The thing that's the best part about this is Dave is so tongue in cheek and so WWE, WWF wrestling about the show, mm-hmm. but it legitimately pisses him off with the whole boner thing. He fucking hates it so much.
Well, it's because like he chose, you know, you guys chose stars. Which I get it, you know, it's friendly.
But Boners was the best one.
But the thing is like you've kind of just like slyly and just constantly just reinforced Boners to where like it can be stars, but everybody knows it's
the
Boners.
Boners.
Yeah.
It's Boners.
That's funny
it's
as
so
shit.
Good.
That's funny. Oh, by the way, speaking of Dave, before we go, your little revelation the last time you were on, with him giving you shit about it. When on your show, my numbers for your last episode spiked out the roof because everybody wanted to hear what you were talking about.
Awesome.
Yep. So, you know.
Love that.
Worked out well for me. So, thanks, man.
All right. Thank you.